You've got your white sheet from last time, which says Divine Law at the top. I've also included a green sheet for today. A little bit of review. Divine Law on your white sheet. We went through and we actually, as you see with the sheet up on the overhead, went through and talked about what the Divine Law was. That it is the law that God has promulgated. It is absolute. It demands obedience. We talked about how it's encapsulated even by the first commandment, because who God is, therefore he has the authority, and everything comes back to it. Talk about fear and love. We talked about the two tables of the law, love God, love neighbor. It is God's teaching about what we do or do not, or not what we're not supposed to do. A little bit of a discussion about, simply because God has told us to do something, does that mean that we can actually do it? We called it the keepability of it. And yet our God demands perfection. We talked about the holiness. One that we saw that we were somewhat weak on, or didn't actually get around to, was that this law which God has commanded and we have not kept is not simply something where God says, oh, well, I just kind of thought maybe you ought to do this. We talked about wrath. We talked about his anger concerning this. We talked about the punishment that goes with it, which is hell. And so this is pretty well a summary of kind of that first divine law that we went through. You turn the page, last time we began to take a look at something called natural law. What is it? Well, we said that God has written his law upon our heart. We talk about a conscience. We're going to go through some of those passages. Because of this, everyone, even without the scriptures, by simply virtue of their birth, has a law inside them that can accuse or excuse. That is, can either reveal how God is angry or how God is pleased. It is something that we know. It's not simply something that is learned later. We did say that the Holy Scriptures reveal this, but this is already something that we have by nature. We call this natural knowledge. There are both condemnations for sin as well as promises or blessings that are promised for those who follow these. And so this is where we got last time. As we push forward today, I want to continue on that page 2, and I'm going to expand upon this quite a bit, and then I want to push it forward. First of all, at the top of the page, where it talks, towards the bottom, where it has the section creation. It says, Psalm 19, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Part of the natural knowledge that we have of God is creation itself. Now, not only do we have, we're going to talk about the conscience inside us that God has placed there, but we're going to say that which is we can see, that is, that which is visible and around us, creation, is something by which naturally, because God has given us human reason, a very good gift of God, what can we learn? Well, the heavens declare the glory of God, the firmament shows his handiwork. I will combine that with Hebrews 3:4, in which it says, for every house is built by someone, but he who built all things is God. When you see a house, you don't say that must have evolved, it just kind of came about. Why? Because there is intricate design, there is purpose that is built into that. You see how it is put together, and you say, wait a minute, someone had to build that. Well, in the very same way, when we look at creation, and I would say my example, I can't remember if I used it last time, when the children come over for chapel, and they see a woolly caterpillar crawling along, and we prick it up and show them, take a look at this caterpillar, and wow. So then we take the children back, and we get out the egg cartons and the pipe cleaner, and you make the little caterpillar, and you put the little eyes on, and you say, okay, let's compare these two. Who made which one? Can you tell the difference? Yeah. And what does that tell you about the maker? Well, based upon how well this caterpillar looks, and yes, maybe you and I could do a little bit better in making one that looks like a little more like God's, nevertheless, you can see something about everything has been made by someone. When we see creation, we say there must have been someone who made this, right? Reason even tells us, okay, so we're going to back up until we get to the point in which we say, well, where did all this come from? Well, it had to come from someone, some God. There had to be a God. And so creation reveals to us that there is a God. Tells us more about this God. He's not just a God. He's an awesome God. His caterpillar, the way his world works, how he put this together, the vastness of space, looking up at the heavens, at the stars, at the Milky Way, and you go, wait a minute, this is immense. This God must be a lot smarter than I am. Romans 1, 20 through 21, if you go up to the passage, what does it pronounce? I got Romans 1, 18 to 21 there. The wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. And then it says, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. Oh, there's 20. 20. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen. You get to see the invisible stuff. How do you get to see that? Well, it's being understood by the things that are made. When you see the things that God has made, what do you know? Even his eternal power and Godhead, those are invisible. But you can see it. That is, you might say, now I see, now I understand, I get it. God has been teaching that from what we have. Because although they knew God, everyone who has creation, naturally, unless you want to deny your reason, unless you want to deny the natural knowledge that God has built into us. Romans 14, verse 1, back down under creation. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none who does good. God's word calls the man who says there is no God a fool. Why? Because creation tells us there is, and he is denying what he sees. Can we do that? Yes. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time today. I want to stick with the positive. But there are those who are fools. There are those who deny what they see. Why? Well, we got to get into, you know, what is it? Do they have their own philosophical idea? Is it their own sinfulness that's keeping them from acknowledging something? And there is always that comes with it. But what do we see? We see that God has set this all up. Top of the page, where it says, what is it? Romans 2, 14 to 16. In addition to creation, which tells us that there is a God, that tells us that he is great, that, you know, these things, Romans 2, 14 to 16. For when Gentiles who do not have the law, by nature do the things in the law, these, although not having the law, are a law to themselves, who show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and between themselves their thoughts accusing, or else excusing them, in the day when God will judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ according to my gospel. So what has God done? Well, in addition to creation, he also writes this law in our heart, and that's what we were talking about, the law that he has written that says these things are wrong, these things are right. Normally, these things teach us about our interactions with our neighbor. All right, well, here's where I'm going. If you get your green sheet out and you go to the chart that is on there, What I am illustrating at this point is this. Divine law is what God has given to us. Usually we put that in connection with the Holy Scriptures, which is divine law, he tells us. Nevertheless, when we talk about natural knowledge includes the law that's written on the heart, as well as what we learn from human reason being a part of this creation that God has given us. That too is divine. God gave us that. God wrote it on our hearts. So that's divine law too. Whoa, okay. So divine law can either be this revealed knowledge or this can be this natural knowledge. Now, I'm going forward with this. It's going to take us several Bible studies to kind of apply some of this, but just to kind of let you know, I want to stay almost in the theoretical here. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time, but to give you an idea, sometimes we go around and we say, well, the Bible teaches this. And you say, well, what about the government who's ruling in this world? What about we live in a society which is not a Christian society, not all. You can go to the scriptures. Is there a way in which we can say there is a natural knowledge in which we would say whether you are Christian or not, natural knowledge teaches certain things that are right and that are wrong? The scriptures say that, absolutely. Where did this natural knowledge come from? It came from God. Now, they can deny God, but as you take a look at every society, from the creation of the world, there has always been certain things that are right and certain things that are wrong. Granted, we will talk about those later on who deny certain things or who have tried to. Those societies have never continued to exist. Communism tried for a while to deny God, finally had to fall. Or there are those who would deny fringe areas of certain laws and things of that sort. But let's take a look at this, what we will call natural knowledge. I want to look at Matthew 7. Did I have that on there?
Yes.
Why can't I see that? What does it require? There. And it's highlighted in yellow on my page. Wow.
There you go.
Woo! Jesus is teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 7, 11 through 12. If you then, being evil, he acknowledges our sinful condition, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask? And then Jesus says this, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. So he's summarizing the teaching of the scriptures, and he says, whatever you want men to do to you, do unto them. That is human reason. That is natural law. Simply based upon this, and let me kind of start with, for example, let's start with the fifth commandment, you shall not murder. Natural human reason would say what? What do you mean you can't be doing that? Why not? What's so wrong with, how would this go against human reason? It's pretty simple. Yeah. If I don't want it to happen to me, that would be wrong. This would be a first principle that we would have. So you're going to feel bad when you kill Jane. tell me more. You're saying that human reason can actually have an empathy. What do you mean? You got something. You just can't spit it out. I'm pulling on him. Tony? Okay, now I think that we can also talk about that as well. Here's the thing. Let's take a look at, looks like this pen's not going to hold up. Tony, why would it be appropriate for, you might say, us to kill somebody else's tribe or someone from somewhere else but not our own? Okay, there may be a sinfulness that goes with this, in which we simply justify our killing of someone else based on our own. That, finally, human reason would finally say, well, then they have a right to kill you, too, and, you know, you would finally say, well, if I have a desire, no, that's not gonna fly. Okay, so... And that's human reason says, well, what if we said it's okay? And unrestrained killing was allowed. Well, we say, well, wait, you know, one, I don't want to, but can a society allow that and survive? We say from human reason, we say this is ridiculous. You can't have this. Human reason says no. I'm going to take it a little bit further. Eric, I think that, as you say, there can be a... empathy, I'm going to say not only do we not want us to be killed, therefore we should not kill others, we also say under this that the killing of those who are underprivileged, the weak, we say, you know, society already in our natural knowledge, what do we understand? We don't simply say, well, the strong fend for themselves and the weak, well, tough, you're weak. We say no. We also say there's a rightness to protecting those who are weak. We don't simply allow this. We are a society, and so not only is it wrong, but I also need to make sure that I protect those. Everyone has a right to life. And so that's a part of human reason as well. So I think there is an empathy. Tony, let me push on just a little bit. I don't necessarily want to leave the...
Now, are you sure you want to say that that's part of human reason?
Yes, absolutely.
Natural knowledge.
As part of natural knowledge and human reason, I'm grouping together. Because with natural knowledge, not only do we have the conscience, we also have, you might say, the reason that goes with it. And we also have... What do you mean?
History proves you wrong when you say that natural knowledge always wants us to protect the weak. It does not.
What I am saying is that this is what human reason teaches. History will show that there have always been those who will deny what is natural knowledge. They will deny human reason. But that doesn't mean it's not true. It doesn't mean that it's not there. And I'll give you a perfect example. My perfect example is with marriage today. Those who, when we say natural human reason, when we are talking about marriage is between a man and a woman, natural law teaches that. When we finally get to it, we'll be talking about the Supreme Court justices, the minority opinion, and where they say this. Others say it doesn't teach that. They deny it. I grant it. People do deny it. But it doesn't mean that it's not taught. It doesn't mean that this is inside us. You can get it to quit speaking. You can warp it. You can mess it up. But by and large, if you take society and human culture... You can say that the majority opinion has always been that. There are always rules to protect the weak in society.
I would even say that, particularly when someone has someone who is weak as part of their family. For example, they
Every one of my pens is dying. God. Rule, I'm going to go to fourth commandment. Fourth commandment. We talk about parents and authorities. Society has, by human reason, has simply said what? There is always a need for order and rule. There has never been a society who has said, we don't need government, we don't need rules, we don't need order. It is built in. In fact, you can't have it. Why? Because every one of you is born of parents. You're born into an order. You can't escape it. There are always going to be, you have authorities over you from the time that you were born who protect those who are within. And then we talk about how does society today talk about our fathers of our country? Why? Because just as fathers have order and protect our family structure, those who are weak, those who are apart, so we have fathers who protect our country, fathers of our country, who are supposed to protect those who are part of us. Tony, when you say, you know, there are some, and I would say human reason says, we do protect our own from those outside. That's a part of human reason. If some other country wants to invade, we say there is a just protection of those who are ours. Now, can you have unprovoked, just because you want to, can your nation go and take over another and do whatever they want? We say, no, wait, no, that's unjust. The pagan philosophers talk about the difference between these things, and yet, yes, there's been society, there have been those for what? I want to get your stuff, I want to, you know, I mean, you can always deny some of these. But there is, in connection with this order, there is rule, there is the protection of those who are weak, and the setting up of a rule in society.
You probably don't want to get there yet, but what about abortion? These are parents
paying their good. I think abortion is a perfect example of those who deny natural knowledge. And I very simply to say, you know, do you want this to be done to you? What you don't want yourself to be aborted, you're not going to do to somebody else. Simply that was. Next thing, you can say from natural knowledge, you can say that which is with, you know, within a mother and that which is without, what is this that is in it? You know, is it an apple tree and then it becomes a baby when it comes out? No, it is. Everybody knows this. And I would say this is natural. Now, there are reasons why, and again, I'm not going to go there, but to say there are reasons why we do this. Why? We do this for feminist principles. We do this for our own sinful, I don't want this to affect my life. I want to go to college. I want to do this. I don't want to get this in the way. I made a bad decision. I want to lead an immoral life. But I think we need to say natural knowledge. And I'm gonna, people will tell you, you are nuts. People will tell you, that's not natural knowledge. Say what you want, but it is. That's my response. Vic? Good. Governmental laws, if you are elected to a position and you say to me, Pastor, do I have to follow the Bible? I would say no. In fact, you're not to follow the Bible in making up your rules. Nevertheless, based upon human reason, every rule that, you know, a completely non-Christian society can come up with very good, based upon natural knowledge. Now, the problem is sometimes they don't. We do need to go further, though, and to see some of the others, and we also need to see the limits of this, and I'll get to that in a little bit as well.
Are you, then, your reason for protecting the weak under natural law would be an extrapolation of protecting the poor?
I think there are two things that go with that. If we are talking about abortion, I think it goes against the natural knowledge of saying there is distinction, and I'm going to get to it, a distinction between man and vegetable or animal. And at this point you say, this is man. What is inside is man and man is different. We understand that. That is natural knowledge. Granted, there is the, you know, those who would deny this, but this is natural knowledge. Two, I think abortion also falls under the natural knowledge where we would say there is order and there is rule, and under this order and rule, there is always the protection of the weak. That's why we have order and rule. Otherwise, there will be those who are the bullies and the strong, and that's why we do this, for a protection of society as a whole. We and you don't have to be a Christian to understand this. Did I miss? I got the, okay, Eric. We are going to get into, and I would say, the philosophers will go as far as to teach what we are going to call the virtues. There are certain things that are virtuous, okay? And all of this can be grouped under it. I would say, because of this conscience, there are certain things that are base, and there are certain things that are honorable. And we know this. Let me push on, and to give you an example of what I'm going to say. We'll go on to you shall not commit adultery. We've already dealt just a little bit and talked about marriage. What do we have with this? There is a distinction between man and beast, right? Beast has no regulations regarding sexual activity. We are men, and we say we act differently. And society, Christian or not, has always had marriage. How did it come? Well, based upon nothing other than procreation, a man and a woman, and that is what sexual activity was involved. That's where it started. And so this idea that this was sacred and set apart. It has been understood that for someone to simply go from bed to bed or to commit adultery, that is, sexual activity, which is not regulated by marriage outside of it, is base. It is dishonorable. Even in societies which allowed it for a time or for various reasons, if you take even like Roman society, it's pretty common to say this. Roman society had marriage. Marriage was intended for bringing up offspring. If men wanted to have sex with young boys, that was for pleasure, but that had nothing to do with the protection of marriage and society, and that was held up. That was wrong, but I'm just going to tell you, they didn't deny that which was by natural knowledge, saying, this is important. This has been set apart. I think we have to say that is where natural knowledge teaches. It's set apart. With this, Eric, there are certain things that are honorable and certain things that are base. What I find, and we'll come back to some of these before, you will find that people will fight against this. Why? Because they've got their own desires and what they want. Don't call my activity base or dishonorable. That's just teaching. It's not natural knowledge. It's not built in. I say, yes, it is. Absolutely, it is. I had a hand question. Vic? They, what did it say it again? Good. What about the Old Testament? In the Old Testament, there were polygamous relationships that were allowed. It was never sanctioned. You will not find in the Bible where it says this is right and this is to be done. In fact, you will find the exact opposite, in which it says, Genesis 3 already, a man and will leave his parents and you'll be united to his wife and they will be one flesh. That is what the divine law is. Were things allowed? Yes. Did God say this is good? Did he sanction it? Did he? No, absolutely not. And yet even sometimes the culture kind of did these things. So to say based upon natural knowledge, no, it shouldn't have happened. So you do see kind of this idea that this is right and this is wrong. I guess I will give one example. I kind of want to stay clear of it, but to give you this idea. What do we fight against? What is shame? What is shame?
Knowing
that
I've done something wrong.
Why do I feel bad? Why? It accuses me. Well, natural knowledge, right? You say to someone, why did you do that? Do you know that? Oh, you know, I feel bad about what I have done. Those would say, oh, that's just taught by society. That's just, you know, a society has been teaching. If society didn't teach that, there wouldn't be. No. The shame came from natural knowledge, and you can't get away from it. And so today, you have a particular thing. You know, we tend to think, oh, well, it's just changed a little bit in society. No, society has gone so wildly off base that there is something called slut shaming. Okay? Definition of a slut. A slut is normally defined as a woman who has multiple partners, who has sex with many men outside of marriage, this kind of thing. It's a derogatory term because the behavior it's offensive, it's wrong. Why? And so there would be shame that goes with this. Okay, here's the rationale. Look at, and don't look it up, but here's the way it goes. The rationale is this. Well, sex should be free. You should be able to do it with anyone just because it's fun. And you should have multiple partners and do it all the time. And that's the way it is. And men have always done this, and it's been okay. But when women do it, then we call them a slut because of this behavior. So therefore, this has been taken up by feminists, in which they say we need to make sure that men and women are equal so that women can engage in this behavior as the same way that men do, and women can, just because they enjoy having sex and having multiple partners or whatever. So this shaming of someone and calling them a slut, trying to get them to go back into their place and don't do this kind of thing, is a bad thing. We need to stop this shaming. And so here's what they do. You know what I mean? Real life is worse than if I made it up. They have parades in which women will like write on their bodies, like with black pens and whatever, bitch, slut, and walk around and say, see, I am this, and I do this, and you won't shame me. This is to deny natural knowledge. Natural knowledge says what? Not only is it wrong for a woman, it's wrong for a man. You can't justify one based upon another. And yes, there will be shame that goes with this. Why? It is base.
Why don't they do that? Say, okay, we're going to make examples of the men who do this. Instead of saying, let's just do men like the guys do.
I have got sinful behavior I want to engage in, Mary. What are you talking about? You think that there is something honorable about this. Normally, when you deny natural knowledge, it is for your own sinful desires, your sin. I want to do this, therefore I have to overturn this. It has to be denied. That's what happens.
We should try to remember the first time we heard the phrase gay pride parade. Or just gay pride and go, what?
Claire. Yes. Right. Either one, there is the denial of these kind of things in which you say, no, that's not, therefore I'm going to engage in it. After a time, you can get your conscience to quit speaking. And when the scriptures talk about this, it says, their conscience has been seared as with an iron. okay? So, you know, and think about, you know, your flesh sizzling with an iron and getting seared and whatever. And so it's unrecognizable, you might say. Here it was, but we just, you know. And so, yes, they are unable then, having done this, God has given them over to it, you know, you would say, so that they know it no longer speaks to them. Now, to say that it's not natural knowledge, it still is. It still is natural knowledge for the rest of creation and for those. I want to get through more of these. What about stealing?
What if everybody did it?
I don't want you to take my... Has God built into creation the idea of ownership? That things are owned, that things belong to certain people? Or is this simply a creation which everything should be free, no one should own anything, we all should simply take with what? How does this, what would human reason say? Once again, the philosophers would say one of the first principles are not only is there, you would protection of your life and that which is most dear to you, that is your wife or your husband, so also this ownership is something built into society. And it is not a bad thing. And what you would not want, you know. And because of this, God also then requires responsibility that goes with what you've been given or not given. And so when you work, if a man will not work, he shall not. That's natural knowledge. It's taught in the scriptures. But it's something that we say, well, of course, you know, well, I just won't work. I'm going to live off of you. And we say, that's not, where did we get the idea it's not right? It's natural knowledge. Tony? I think that there are certain things, and I would say, in which natural knowledge teaches some of these, and I would give a very good example, in which we would say the deer that are wild, even if the deer walk around on and eat the impatiens in my front yard, I understand that what? They belong to the government. I can't necessarily kill them. And so a natural knowledge that says, maybe it says that the land at one time, you know, you would say, nevertheless, there is always an ownership in which, so can I come into the Indian chief and take his wife? No, that belongs to him. Well, can I take his clothes? Can I take his beads? Can I take his bow? No, that's mine. There is always ownership that goes with it. And there are certain things in which, now granted, we also understand that there are certain things in which we say the water, you can't just dam up the water and keep me from having it. We understand there are things that does belong, you might say, to a society as a whole. The Indians understood that as well. So I don't think those are a disconnect, you know, in those instances. Claire? Right. Exactly. I mean, and when you talk about, you know, like, you know, well, we're all going to be together and we're all going to kind of do this, there's always been the order or the rule in which but you have to make up all these rules to make this all happen. And then it falls apart because it can't. False witness, what we call the eighth commandment, bearing false witness against your neighbor, lying and truth, natural knowledge, society at some point say, well, you know, it's always okay if I lie. But in a society, when we have rules set up, what do we say? There has to be, what if there is no rule? If what if lying and truth? Then can you govern society with order and rule? No. Can you have a contract? No. Can you have a business relationship? No, can you? It's no, everybody understands this. It's natural knowledge in which you say, and what we would say, especially a modern society, if you perjure yourself, there's a problem. Why? It's base, it's wrong. Correct. I'm going to push forward, and here's what I need to do. I'm going to draw a line here as best I can. You're getting new pens next week. I am going to draw a line here. I'm getting excited. Back off. What do I find? This we call the second table of the law. I'm going to exclude 9 and 10 for just a minute because I got to summarize. 4 through 8, these are in the area, we would say, of natural law, and they are regarding our actions. Usually these are the easiest of the natural laws for people to admit, for people to say, yep, I see that kind of thing. Got it. The first table of the law, which deals with God. These dealing with our neighbor? Yes. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If you don't want them to do it to you, don't do it to them. We got that. What about this up here? This falls under, we would say, the conscience and creation. That there is a God and that there is a God who has created and whatever the first commandment deals with, having no other gods. Yes, you ought to worship the God who created everything. There is one God. Now, based upon natural knowledge, you don't know who he is. Only by means of the revealed knowledge of God do you know that it's the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit of the triune God. But you do know that there is a God. You know that he created everything. Yes, there have been societies that had multiple gods. They're gone. Finally, everyone kind of went, wait a minute. Even in those Roman societies, a Greek society that had multiple gods, they even talked about how they were all kind of combined into even one. This has always kind of been where we would say there is some principle, something that is above that binds it all together. The next thing is, if there is a God, if we're talking about using the name of God, how you speak about that God matters. There have always been rules concerning speaking about God. What do you say about him? How do you speak about him? Cursing God is wrong. That is part of natural knowledge. The third one, we talk about the Sabbath day or ceremonies. there have always been in society regulations concerning how do you therefore, if there is a God and you're not to curse him, then he must require something of you. What does he require? And if you don't have the scriptures, you're going to have to make it up. You're going to have to come up with, God wants me to burn some incense. God wants me to get on my knees. God wants me to sacrifice my firstborn child. God wants me to. There have always been. And so I will group based upon creation, conscience, these things. This is first table. It's very difficult to acknowledge, to get people to acknowledge the natural knowledge of God that comes from this. But that is where we have, only the fool says there is no God. There is a God. Now, what does he require of you and who is he? We may not know based upon natural knowledge, but the scriptures say things like, God set this up so you would seek him, and he's not far from you. Find him in the scriptures. That would also be included in this natural knowledge. If that is included in natural knowledge, if this second table of law is included in natural